we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's International Women's Day, and we'll celebrate it by listening to several sportswomen who we've featured on the show in recent years. Allison Overholt is the first female editor-in-chief of ESPN the magazine. Allison is also the top editor of the ESPNW digital platform. I asked Allison, in terms of female athletes, do you see disparities in the way they're covered by the sports media compared with male athletes?
Absolutely. You know, there's no getting around the fact that there's still a massive difference. And part of that is that, you know, women's sports, particularly women's professional sports, are at a different place in their development life cycle. So you end up with, you know, sometimes, you know, expectations that the women's game will be in the same place as the men's game. And when it's not, you end up with folks who sort of come at coverage from almost an unconscious bias of negativity towards it. But one of the things, you know, that I've noticed a lot, it feels like the major difference is that so much of the coverage of women centers on how we cover women. That's actually the primary topic of conversation. There's so much talk of how do we package them? Are people watching? Do people care? And there's actually so very little about how women actually play the games that they play. So that's one of the things that, you know, ESPNW often jumps into that breach and, you know, works very hard to elevate the stories of athletes and their accomplishments. But also something I'm hoping to bring to the magazine where we can shine a spotlight on, you know, the athletes as athletes, you know, how they play the game, really, really looking at that side of things and much less about, you know, how are they presented and how do we feel about the way people feel about them.
What sports did you play growing up?
So when I was a little kid, I probably did the rounds of, you know, what every American kid does. I played youth soccer. I thought I was going to be a gymnast until I realized at, you know, age 10 that I was closing in on, you know, becoming a very tall individual. let's see. I wanted to be on the diving team. I think my mother told me I had to be on swim team first, and so I abandoned that because I was never a fast swimmer. By the time I was in middle school, I had switched over to basketball, and that was my sport. So I pretty much lived and breathed basketball through, you know, junior high and high school, spent every summer at basketball camps.
March is Women's History Month in the USA. Are there one or two memorable American sports moments involving women that really stand out for you?
Oh, sure. I would imagine those moments are probably different for everyone, depending on what formative stages you were in your own life and where those sports moments intersect. So, you know, for me, being a kid in the early 80s, watching the Nadia Comaneci TV movie over and over on repeat, you know, I would probably say that my first great women's sports memory is Mary Lou Retton in the 1984 Olympics. You know, I remember jumping around my living room like a crazy person when she was doing her floor exercises and watching her vault and thinking she was going to fly through the ceiling and then that huge smile. So that's probably my first women's sports moment. You know, when I was in college the summer the WNBA started, I went to an LA Sparks game for my birthday with three of my high school friends, two of whom had been high school teammates. And for us, it was less about a particular sports moment and more the fact that that league had started. You know, the idea that girls could start to make money playing basketball just felt like everything had changed when we got to see that. And then probably, you know, once I finished college, I remember watching the 1999 Women's World Cup. I was in my first apartment in Washington, D.C., actually, where you are.
Okay.
And, you know, it was one of those little basement apartments. I don't even think I had cable. I was watching the game on this tiny television and just, you know, screaming my head off when that team won that game.
That's Allison Overholt, the editor-in-chief of ESPN the magazine. Allison is also the top editor of the ESPNW digital platform, and she spoke with me from ESPN headquarters in the eastern U.S. city of Bristol, Connecticut. I'm Sunny Young in Washington, and you're listening to a special International Women's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Joining us now with more on International Women's Day is my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. Happy Women's Day, Gwen.
Thanks so much, Sonny. I remember your interview with Allison Overholt very well. And actually, a few days ago, Allison recognized March as Women's History Month by naming a few women who have inspired her and paved the way for her success. And they are some of the most influential women in sports journalism. Allison wrote on her Twitter page, "I'm celebrating 2 years in a role I never thought I could have. All of us in this business stand on the very strong shoulders of Robin Herman, Melissa Lutke, Lisa Olson, and many more who have literally opened doors for us. Hashtag Women's History Month." Well, women all around the world are being honored today, but I want to focus on a very special collection that was just unveiled by a very well-known toy company here in the United States. First, I'll give you a little background. The company Mattel became an American mainstay when, in 1959, they launched a fashion doll named Barbie. Barbie was blonde-haired and blue-eyed, very thin, and wildly popular, if not a bit controversial. Some consumers were concerned that Barbie promoted unattainable standards of beauty, an unrealistic body image, and represented a lack of diversity. Well, for the past several years, Mattel began to manufacture the Barbie doll in various skin tones, body shapes, and occupations. And on Wednesday, the company launched their newest Inspiring Women collection as part of their hashtag More Role Models campaign. The senior vice president and general manager for Mattel's Barbie line is quoted as saying, "Barbie will be honoring the largest lineup of role models, timed to International Women's Day, because we know that you can't be what you can't see." This year's collection features 17 dolls, and 5 of them are athletes of different backgrounds. And here they are. Sara Gamma, an Italian football player of Congolese descent. She is Juventus Women in Italy national team captain and a strong promoter for the development of women's football. Hui Ruoqi, volleyball champion and captain of China's 2016 Olympic gold medal winning team. Her fans adoringly refer to her as a volleyball goddess. She has recently established the Hui Ruoqi Women's Volleyball Development Fund to further promote the sport. Lorena Ochoa of Mexico is a professional golfer who has won on the LPGA Tour 27 times, including 2 majors. She has been inducted in the World Golf Hall of Fame and is active in her charity work through her Lorena Ochoa Foundation. Nicola Adams Obe is the first female boxer to win gold in boxing. She is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist representing Great Britain. She is her country's most successful female boxer and the only female boxer to have held 4 amateur titles. Nicola says she hopes a doll made in her likeness will have a positive influence on the next generation of young girls.
I'm hoping that young girls will be inspired by seeing my doll and hopefully getting to boxing, maybe even other sports. I think it's a really nice campaign to be able to show the next generation that even through the dolls that they play with, that they can achieve lots of different things, different careers.
And last but not least, Chloe Kim is still living her best life. She is the first generation Asian American 2018 Olympic snowboarding champion and also the youngest woman to win a gold medal. Chloe wrote this tweet after the big announcement. "I'm so happy to be honored as a Barbie Shiro alongside these incredible women." To which Barbie responded, "Thank you for being such an inspiration to girls everywhere to follow their dreams and ride to new heights. Hashtag more role models." Past Barbie Shiro athletes have included fencing champion Ibtihaj Mohammed, who became the first female Muslim-American athlete to earn an Olympic medal in 2016 and the first woman to wear hijab while competing, and Gabby Douglas, the first African-American gymnast to win gold in the individual all-around event in the 2012 Olympic Games. This Twitter follower applauded the achievements of all the women, writing, "Kudos to Barbie for showing girls that they can be what they see. And congratulations to the women who inspired these creations. You are all amazing role models." The official Barbie page tweeted this ahead of yesterday's launch of their newest collection. With 86% of U.S. moms worried about the type of role models their daughters are exposed to, we are committed to shining a light on empowering female role models in an effort to inspire more girls. And I'll end with this tweet. "When I think of Barbie, I think of the cherished doll passed down to me, the collection I amassed on my own, and the empowering words in so many of their ads. We girls can do anything. So glad they're celebrating women who prove the words are so true. Happy Women's Day, everybody. Back to you, Sonny."
Happy Women's Day, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special International Women's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Odessa Swartz was an excellent athlete in her prime, but apartheid in her home country of South Africa kept her from competing on track and field's biggest stage. Thanks to her world record-setting son, Odessa finally got a taste of Olympic glory at the 2016 Rio Games in Brazil. Her son, Wade Van Niekerk, clocked a world record 43.03 seconds in winning the gold medal in the 400 meters in Rio. Reporter Haiti Fitzpatrick asked Odessa Swartz for her reaction to her son's spectacular Olympic achievement.
"Well, it's still such a surreal feeling. It feels like I'm still dreaming. It's an emotion that I just cannot explain. If you ask me what was going through my mind during the race, I have no idea, because all that I remember is when everything was done, I was standing on someone else's chair, banging on their head and screaming my lungs out. So I can't remember what went through my head at that time."
"I had read some things about, you know, you and Wade as I was doing some research, and I came across a story about the complications there were when Wade was born. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?"
"Yes, Wade was born at 29 weeks. He weighed just over 1 kg, and when he was born with jaundice, and he had a bit of a blood infection, and they had to do a blood transfusion. And they gave us about 24 hours. They said after the 24 hours, he might have one or the other disability. But the Lord was good, and he's world champion today. He's always been a fighter. I mean, in that first 24 hours of his life, he fought so hard. We've never, ever had problems with him being ill as he grew up as a child. I mean, when he was 18, the first time we had him at the doctors when he had German measles. And, I mean, we were told in that first 24 hours of his life that he might not make it."
When you think about that and you look at what he has accomplished at such a young age, what goes through your mind?
Just pride, because he's just a never-say-die type of person. I mean, he's always been smaller than his friends at school. He's always been a skinny little boy, but he never stood back for any challenge. I mean, give him any challenge and he would take it, and he'll take you on. And I mean, it just makes you proud as a parent when you see that fighting spirit within in him as a person, but also with that strong personality of him. He's also such a soft, gentle-hearted person. So, yeah, it just makes you very proud when I look at him today, and just to think that I might have lost him when he was just born.
What does it mean for you, and an accomplished athlete yourself, to see your son go and compete in places that you were denied in the past just because of the time and the politics in South Africa then?
When I look at any person, whether you're South African or no matter where you come from in the world, a lot of us, we don't grab hold of the opportunities that we get in life. And I mean, when I look at him, he's been given this opportunity, he's been given this talent. When I look at him, how hard he works every single day, come winter or summer, come rain or sunshine, he'll be at that track. He'll be in the gym in the morning. we didn't have all those opportunities that they have today. We can't compare ourselves to that now. I mean, like I always tell people, that was a generation that was meant for us, and this is a generation meant for them. I think we were just meant to be the parents of this great generation that's coming through at the moment. And as parents, we can support them in whatever they want to achieve in life at the moment. And I mean, and that's what we're trying to do as parents, because the world is just the oyster at the moment. And I mean, they can either make it or they can break it. It's their choice. He's chosen to make the best of his talents, and he's chosen to give it his all. I mean, he's so committed, and he's just reaping the fruits of him today.
Mrs. Watts, was there ever a moment in Wade's athletic career where it looked like this could be the end? Was there a moment where things went bad for him, something that he had to overcome?
Oh, yeah, a couple of years ago when he qualified for the London Olympics, he pulled his hamstring. And I mean, it was a very, very tough phase in his life. He went to rehab and he worked so hard. And then the hamstring was just very persistent. It just kept on coming back. And I mean, there was a time when he said, I don't think I want to go on with athletics. I think I'll rather leave it because his hamstring is just not getting better. And then someone like your tiny aunt walked into his life and decided, let's then move on to a 400-meter program and let's just completely heal this hamstring. And I mean, see how things have changed for him. And he was about to give up because he was just sick and tired of this hammy that's just not getting better.
Knowing his talent, and you've had a front row seat to what it has taken to help get Wade to the top where he is now, what are your hopes for him for the future? If you had one piece of advice for him, what would that be?
That he never stops dreaming, because he's such a big dreamer, and because he's such a big dreamer, he works towards those dreams, and he's a person that will make his dreams a reality. So I would just tell him never to stop dreaming and never stop achieving.
Never stop dreaming and never stop achieving. That's Odessa Swartz, the mother of South African Olympic champion and world record holder Wade Van Niekerk. And she spoke with reporter Haiti Fitzpatrick from Cape Town, South Africa. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to a special International Women's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The National Women's Soccer League kicks off a sixth season on March 24th. The Seattle Reign will host the NWSL club based here in the Washington area, the Washington Spirit, in the northwestern U.S. city of Seattle, Washington, in one of the league's opening day matches. One of the Spirit's veteran players is 35-year-old Joanna Lohman. I asked Joanna, how has women's soccer changed since you turned professional?
It's changed a lot. I think the popularity has grown, and it has not been a linear trajectory, right? We've had two failed leagues in the United States. Now we're on our third league, but going into a historic, sixth season this year. So, you know, there's so much to be said for the work that we've done to really grow the game, not just in the United States, but globally. I think there's more awareness and attention to the Women's Champions League. Leagues overseas are growing. You're seeing U.S. players going overseas to play in France, to play in Germany, to play in England. So I think as a whole, the game is growing. But, you know, there's still so much work to be done. And I'm just proud to be a part of a group that I think is really blazing trails for the young women behind us.
In terms of blazing trails, Joanna, you blazed some trails in 2017 as a sports envoy with the U.S. State Department. Can you talk about your trip to Ivory Coast?
Yeah, I would love to. My trip to Cote d'Ivoire was one that really had a lot of momentum. It was the third phase of the program, so you know there was already a lot of energy behind it. And we held soccer festivals around the country, and in those soccer festivals, we highlighted a group of national champions who demonstrated the reconciliation values that the State Department was trying to teach in the best way. So we're talking about kids from the age of 14 to 18, both boys and girls, a group of about 18 kids who were, you know, hand-selected as kids who were incredible leaders for their communities. So in the third phase, we went around the country and, you know, went back to the villages and to the into the cities that some of these all-stars were from. And we held soccer festivals where we had a, you know, celebrity match where the all-stars, I played in the game against the all-stars, and the whole community came out and watched, and there was music. And then after that, we had more of a clinic where they had different stations, and the kids had to do certain drills, but also they learned about the lessons that were being taught, you know, for the reconciliation effort. So, you know, teamwork, peaceful communication, tolerance, nonviolence, you know, all of these things that are so important to the country as it moves forward. So, you know, for me, it's just so fulfilling to be able to use the sport that I love so much to make an impact in a way that's greater than any game. And, you know, I walk away from these experiences, I can't believe this is my life. And I cannot believe that I have this platform to really connect with people that, you know, on the surface, I'm so different from, right? We're from different countries, different races, different religions, different cultures, and different genders most of the time. But here I am, you know, playing on the same field with them, and we're smiling and we're laughing, and all of these barriers are immediately broken down. And I think it's just a testament for the power of sport and, you know, what can be done if we shed, you know, all of these labels and stereotypes and really try to connect with one another. And for me, they're just, it's indescribable, to be honest. And, you know, my heart is so full from being able to do these programs with the State Department.
How did your trip to Cote d'Ivoire or Ivory Coast differ from your previous one to Botswana?
So my previous one was a program in Botswana called Girl Power. So I only worked with women. And it was a program purely designed for the time that I was there. So the program in Cote d'Ivoire was both genders I got to work with, and also, too, it was a program that, like I said before, was in its third phase. So it had a lot more longevity, in my opinion, and it had a lot, it was much broader in terms of its bandwidth. So I felt as if I was able to work with a lot more kids. And, you know, neither program, we're not going to compare the two necessarily in terms of its worth, because they were both, you know, they're incredible programs. But I was able to work with a lot more kids in Cote d'Ivoire and went to a few more cities than I was able to go to in Botswana.
That's Joanna Lohman of the Washington Spirit Club in the National Women's Soccer League. And Joanna spoke with me here in Washington. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special International Women's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The U.S. women's national soccer team defeated England 1-0 on Wednesday night in Orlando, Florida, to win its second She Believes Cup title in 3 years. The world number one ranked U.S. team beat third ranked England on an own goal that came off a cross from Megan Rapinoe in the 60th minute. In the earlier game Wednesday at Orlando City Stadium, sixth-ranked France topped number two Germany 3-0. The USA women finished atop the She Believes Cup table with 2 wins and 1 draw. Before the match in Orlando, there was a moment of silence for the 17 victims of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida. The U.S. women's national soccer team invited the family of victim Alyssa Alhadif, as well as her club and school teams. The guests all received special jerseys with Alhadif's name and number on them. And let's give a special Sunny Side of Sports salute on International Women's Day to veteran American soccer star Carly Lloyd. The two-time FIFA Women's Player of the Year started the game for the USA in Orlando. It was Carly's 250th appearance for the U.S. women's national soccer team. Next up for the U.S. women is a pair of friendly matches against regional rival Mexico. The American women will host Mexico April 5th in Jacksonville, Florida, and then the teams will play again 3 days later in Houston, Texas. And that wraps up the March 8th International Women's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Justin Thwaites. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, Ambassador Mark Green, and the Secretary of State for the Department for International Development of the United Kingdom, Penny Mordaunt, have launched the first-ever humanitarian grand challenge called Creating Hope in Conflict. It encourages innovators around the world to submit ideas to save and improve the lives of the most vulnerable and hardest-to-reach people affected by humanitarian crises caused by conflict. The partners will invest a combined $15 million over the next 5 years to support innovations that enhance the effectiveness and efficiency of humanitarian assistance. Announced on February 19th, the initial call for innovation seeks solutions that engage the private sector to provide, supply, or locally generate safe drinking water and sanitation, energy, life-saving information, or health supplies and services to help meet the needs of conflict-affected people. The Humanitarian Grand Challenge represents a multi-governmental partnership that enables governments and the private sector to work together alongside affected communities to address the unprecedented magnitude of suffering around the world. Nearly 136 million people across 25 countries are in need of humanitarian assistance. Less than 1% of humanitarian aid focuses on investing in innovations. The Humanitarian Grand Challenge is expected to fund 10 to 15 seed projects with grants of up to $250,000 and 2 to 4 transition-to-scale projects of up to $1 million to support the refinement, testing, and implementation of solutions that have already achieved proof of concept. This is the 10th Grand Challenge supported by USAID and its partners. To date, USAID and its Grand Challenge partners have delivered grant funding and technical assistance worth more than $500 million to more than 450 innovators in 70 countries. The United States is proud to work with the United Kingdom, other international partners, and innovators around the world to meet the daunting challenge of saving lives in conflict-driven humanitarian crises.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.